Welcome to A-Minder, a podcast where we summarize the latest publications on neurodegenerative disease research so that you can stay up to date with the newest findings. Every month, our team of scientists will sort and organize the titles into themes and present shortened versions of the abstracts. We'll make sure to mention the title, the journal, the first author, and the last author for each publication. Whether you're in the lab, on the bus, or cooking your meal, we hope you find this podcast helpful.
Hey everyone, this is Nyla. I'll be the host of today's episode along with Ellen Koch, and you're listening to part two of treatment development in our Alzheimer's disease series. So today we'll be covering a portion of preclinical testing papers that were published in February 2020. As a reminder, this is one of our trial episodes, and we'd appreciate your feedback either through our short survey or by email. You can find the information for both of those in our episode notes. So the studies that we'll be reviewing today were all conducted in animal models and cover a range of potential treatments. I'll be summarizing papers in which the authors target neurotransmitter systems, tau phosphorylation, amyloid beta production and toxicity, and inflammatory processes, as well as some new antibody-mediated approaches and immunotherapies. I'll then hand it off to Ellen to summarize the new findings on targeting oxidative stress and mitochondrial function, metabolism, and gut microbiota. And there are also a few new multi-targeted treatment approaches, and some interventions to improve cognition and memory. So let's jump right into it. We'll start with five papers that look at manipulating acetylcholinesterase and other aspects of the cholinergic system to treat Alzheimer's. The first is in vitro and in vivo anti-acetylcholinesterase and antioxidative effects of Schizandra chinensis. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's also called a five-flavored berry, for your knowledge. Anyway, of that plant's extract, a potential candidate for Alzheimer's disease. The first author is Song, and the last author is Zeng, Z-E-N-G. And the journal is Evidence-Based Complementary Alternative Medicine. In this study, extracts from nine traditional Chinese medical herbs were tested for anti-acetylcholinesterase activity by Alman's microplate assay and cytotoxicity by cell counting kit 8. Schizandra chinensis, I'll refer to that as SC extract, protected pheochromocytoma, or PC12, cells against hydrogen peroxide-induced toxicity. It did this by improving the cell survival rate in a dose-dependent manner. It also showed significant free radical DPPH scavenging activities, ferric-reducing antioxidant power, and ABTS radical scavenging. The authors also tested SC extract on scopolamine-induced AD mice to determine its treatment potential. They report that SC causes similar effects to alleviate the mice's cognitive deficits compared to the drug piracetam. Moreover, the acetylcholinesterase activity and the malondialdehyde, or MDA, levels were shown to be reversed in the SC-treated mice as compared to the control group. Taken together, these results suggest that SC extract may be a potential therapeutic candidate for AD. All right, the next paper is biased M1 muscarinic receptor mutant mice inform the design of next generation drugs. This is by first author Bradley, last author Tobin, and was published in Nature Chemical Biology. So while M1 muscarinic acetylcholine receptors, or M1 MACHRs, may be a therapeutic target for AD treatment, drug discovery programs focused on these receptors have failed so far, largely due to cholinergic adverse responses. In this study, the authors employ novel chemogenic and phosphorylation-deficient G-protein-biased mouse models. They paired this with a toolbox of probe molecules to establish M1 MACHR neurological processes that were previously unappreciated but may be pharmacologically targetable. This includes anxiety-like behaviors and hyperlocomotion. By mapping the upstream signaling pathways regulating these responses, they suggest a role of receptor phosphorylation-dependent signaling in driving clinically relevant outcomes and in controlling adverse effects, including epileptic-like seizures. They conclude that M1-MACHR ligands that promote receptor phosphorylation-dependent signaling would protect against cholinergic adverse effects. In addition, they would drive beneficial responses such as learning and memory and anxiolytic behavior relevant for the treatment of AD. Next, we have mechanisms of anticholinesterase interference with tau aggregation inhibitor activity in a tau transgenic mouse model. This was published in Current Alzheimer Research by first author Riede and last author Wischik. Given the interference of acetylcholinesterase inhibitors with tau aggregation inhibitors that has been observed in clinical trials, this group set out to determine what could be going wrong using tau transgenic mice treated with the tau aggregation inhibitor LMTM, as well as chronically treated with rivastigmine. They found that LMTM alone was able to effectively rescue many symptoms of AD, including restoring hippocampal acetylcholine levels, increasing synaptophysin levels in multiple brain regions, and rescuing deficits in spatial learning. When mice were pre-treated with rivastigmine, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, however, almost all of these effects were reduced or eliminated. Based on their data, the group proposed that there is no single locus for the negative interaction and that chronic treatment with an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor can produce compensatory homeostatic downregulation in multiple neuronal systems. The next paper is entitled Pharmacological Characterization of the Novel and Selective Alpha-7 Nicotinic Acetylcholine Receptor Positive Allosteric Modulator BNC375. This is by first author Wang and last author Uzlana and was published in Journal of Pharmacology and Experimental Therapy. Given that targeting the alpha-7 nicotinic acetylcholine receptor can be beneficial for cognitive deficits, but that orthosteric agonists of these receptors have limited clinical utility, this group identified and characterized a novel selective alpha-7 positive allosteric modulator called BNC375. In both primate and rat models, they found that this compound is safe, selective, and effective. They also found that it reversed scopolamine-induced cognitive deficits in both rats and rhesus monkeys. This suggests that the BNC375 compound may be useful in the context of AD treatment. In line with the previous paper, the next one is also on positive allosteric modulators of the same receptor. So the title is Positive Allosteric Modulators of Alpha-7 Nicotinic Acetylcholine Receptors Enhance Procognitive Effects of Conventional Anti-Alzheimer's Drugs in Scopolamine-Treated Rats. The first author is Potasievich, and the last author is Nikiforok. I'm sorry for the pronunciations. And the journal is Behavioral Brain Research. This study explored the possibility of using positive allosteric modulators, I'll refer to them as PAMs here, of alpha-7 nicotinic acetylcholine receptors, so again, that's alpha-7 NACHRs, to attenuate cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease, perhaps in combination with currently approved anti-AD drugs. Using scopolamine-treated rats, they evaluated the efficacy of different compounds in improving the resulting memory deficit, which was measured by novel object recognition. The treatment was either co-administration of type 1 and type 2 alpha-7 NACHR PAMs with acetylcholinesterase inhibitors, or with memantine, which is a non-competitive glutamate NMDA receptor antagonist. Both PAMs, as well as the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors and memantine, attenuated the recognition memory impairments. Interestingly, the co-administration of previously reported sub-effective doses of the PAMs with either acetylcholinesterase inhibitors, so that's donepezil and galantamine, or memantine, also reinstated object recognition memory in scopolamine-treated animals. These findings suggest the therapeutic potential of NACHR PAMs in AD. So overall, these findings support the therapeutic potential of alpha-7 NACHR PAMs in AD. This next paper is targeting the glutamatergic system. The title of this paper includes another long word, so excuse me in advance. It is the discovery of 4-aryl-quinoline-2-carboxamides, highly potent and selective class of mGluR2 negative allosteric modulators, from high throughput screening to activity in animal models. And this was published in Bioorganic and Medicinal Chemistry Letters by first author Xu and last author Converso. This group sought to selectively target mGluR2 without the undesirable effects of also targeting mGluR3, and they found a highly potent class of mGluR2 negative allosteric modulators. Again, these are called 4-aryl-quinoline-2-carboxamides, and they identified these through a high throughput screen. They then went on with medicinal chemistry optimization and showed potent in vivo efficacy in rodents. That was a very short summary. So that leads us into the next section, which is targeting tau phosphorylation and tau protein. Again, just one paper in this section, which is the direct activation of protein phosphatase 2, which is PP2A, by tricyclic sulfonamides ameliorates Alzheimer's disease pathogenesis in cell and animal models. This was published in Neurotherapeutics by first author Wei, last author Liu. Given that decreased protein PP2A activity has been observed in AD brains, which can be linked to the hyperphosphorylation of tau leading to neurofibrillary tangles, this group sought to evaluate synthetic tricyclic sulfonamide PP2A activators, I'll refer to this as SMAPs, as a potential AD therapeutic. In their AD cell model, the SMAPs increased PP2A activity and decreased both tau phosphorylation and amyloid beta levels. When they then went on to look at this in an AD rat model, so this is the hyperhomocysteinemia rat model, they found that cognitive impairment, tau hyperphosphorylation, A-beta overproduction, neuronal dendritic spine loss, and synapse impairment in the hippocampus were all rescued with SMAP administration. The next three papers are targeting amyloid beta-mediated toxicity. The first paper in this group is CIRBP ameliorates neuronal amyloid toxicity via antioxidative and anti-apoptotic pathways in primary cortical neurons. This was published in Oxidative Medicine and Cellular Longevity by first author Su and last author Q. The aim of this study was to investigate cold-inducible RNA binding protein, so that's what CIRBP stands for, in the context of AD. This group found that it exerted protective effects against neuronal amyloid toxicity through antioxidative and anti-apoptotic pathways. They did this by culturing rat primary neurons and found that CIRBP overexpression protected against intracellular amyloid and A-beta 2535 cytotoxicity through reversing electrophysiological differences, ROS production, and the increased levels of pro-apoptotic proteins resulting from the amyloid beta treatment. Next, we have delivering crocetin across the blood-brain barrier by using gamma-cyclodextrin to treat Alzheimer's disease. This was published in Scientific Reports by the first author Wang and last author Yang. So crocetin has shown therapeutic potential in AD, but poor water solubility and bioavailability have been major obstacles in its development and pharmaceutical application. This group developed a novel water-soluble gamma-cyclodextrin inclusion complex of the compound to overcome limitations of the free drug. They determined that their novel derivative was both effective at reducing amyloid beta and was non-toxic to SHSY5Y and 7PA2 cells, and that it significantly increased bioavailability and blood-brain barrier crossing in rats. This both highlights the potential of crocetin as a therapeutic for AD and the possibility of extending the use of gamma-cyclodextrin to other pharmaceuticals in development. So the next paper is Neuroprotective Effect of New Nanochelating-Based Nanocomplex, ALZ-C3, against amyloid beta-142-induced toxicity in rats, a comparison with memantine, or memantine if you would like, I don't care. So this was published in Pharmaceutical Research. The first author is Karimi Salis, and the last author is Nazaran. And in the study, the authors used nanochelating technology to synthesize ALZ-C3. They were interested in its therapeutic effects compared to memantine and tested it on a rat model of AD. Amyloid beta was injected into the brain of these rats to induce pathology, and their findings suggest that ALZ-C3 could significantly prevent the memory impairment that was caused by amyloid beta injection, as well as the amyloid beta-142 toxicity. So that leads us into the next section, which is on targeting amyloid beta production rather than amyloid beta-mediated toxicity. The first paper, again, has a complicated plant name, species name, so my apologies in advance. It is called Protective Effects of Compounds from Simisifuga dehurica, I think, against amyloid beta production in vitro and in scopolamine-induced memory impairment in vivo. This was published in Journal of Natural Products. The first author is Li, and the last author is Yang. This group investigated the potential beneficial effects of the medicinal plant, again, C for Simisifuga dehurica, and its components on Alzheimer's disease. They focused on amyloid beta production and scopolamine-induced memory impairment in mice. Four compounds, listed 1 to 4, efficiently interrupted A-beta generation by suppressing the level of beta secretase in APPCHO cells. Moreover, compound 4 improved the cognitive performances of mice with scopolamine-induced disruption on behavioral tests and the expression of memory-related proteins. So that was actually the only paper in targeting amyloid beta production. So we'll move on to antibody-mediated approaches and immunotherapies, and there are 3 papers in this category. The first one is entitled Novel Monoclonal Antibody 3B8 specifically recognizes pyroglutamate modified amyloid beta 342 peptide in brain of AD patients as well as 3X transgenic AD transgenic mice. So this was published in Neuroscience Letters by first author Acero and last author Gevorkian. And focusing on amyloid beta variants, apart from the full-length 140/42 peptide, this group generated and characterized a mouse monoclonal protein specific for an amyloid beta peptide with an amino terminal pyroglutamate at position 3 amyloid beta N3 PE. Yeah, I hope you understood that. This variant is a major constituent of amyloid deposits in the AD brain, and the antibody generated here is able to recognize amyloid aggregates in both human AD brain specimens and in the triple transgenic AD mouse. The novel antibody 3B8 can recognize 2 conformational epitopes of the amyloid beta N3PE, regardless of the pyroglutamate modification, and may have therapeutic or diagnostic applications. The next paper is Vaccines Targeting the Primary Amino Acid Sequence and Conformational Epitope of Amyloid Beta Had Distinct Effects on Neuropathology and Cognitive Deficits in EAE AD mice. First author is Yu, last author is Liu, and this was published in the British Journal of Pharmacology. This group generated EAE AD mice by crossing APP-PS1 mice with experimental autoimmune encephalomyelitis, which is EAE. So they crossed them with EAE mice. They used this model to investigate the efficacy and safety of two vaccines. Immunization with amyloid beta 142 aggregates promoted neuroinflammation, enhanced amyloid beta levels and plaque burden, and failed to restore cognitive deficits in EAE-AD mice. By contrast, immunization with an oligomer-specific conformational epitope dramatically attenuated neuroinflammation, reduced amyloid beta levels, and improved cognitive performance in EAE-AD mice. According to these findings, it seems like the EAE-AD, whatever, mouse model can display the potential side effects of AD immune approaches, which conventional AD models fail to exhibit. Strategies specifically targeting amyloid beta oligomers may be safe and hold benefits for the treatment of AD. The last paper in the immunotherapy section is preclinical characterization of E2814, a high-affinity antibody targeting the microtubule-binding repeat domain of tau for passive immunotherapy in Alzheimer's disease. This was published in ACTA Neuropathologica Communications by first author Roberts and last author De Silva. In this paper, the authors introduce E2814, a humanized high-affinity IgG1 antibody recognizing the tau microtubule binding region and its murine precursor 7G6. To characterize these two antibodies, they investigated their potential to inhibit tau aggregation. They report that both inhibited tau aggregation in vitro. They also found that antibody treatment lessened the deposition of sarcosyl insoluble tau in the brain. Furthermore, in AD brain, E2814 bound different types of tau filaments and recognized pathological tau structures. Taken together, the data reported here make E2814 a candidate for clinical development. Next, we have papers targeting inflammatory processes. There are 6 papers in this category. The first is CSB6B, prevents beta amyloid associated neuroinflammation and cognitive impairments via inhibiting NFKB and NLRP3 in microglia cells. This was published in International Immunopharmacology by first author Yan and last author Kui. This group tested Chicago Sky Blue 6B, which is CSB6B. It's a pigment used in biochemical staining, and they tested this in BV2 microglia stimulated by amyloid beta oligomers and LPS, as well as in amyloid beta-treated mice. It was found to inhibit the pro-inflammatory processes in both systems and increased mRNA expression of arginase 1 in the BV2 cells. This suggests that CSB6B might promote the polarization into M2 phenotype and may counteract amyloid beta-induced cognitive impairments and neuroinflammation by inhibiting NFKB and NLRP3. Next, we have a paper investigating nasal administration of a drug. This paper is by first author Chen, last author Jin, and it was published in International Journal of Pharmaceutics. And this paper has another complicated title, so I'm trying my best here. Nasal thymosaponin B2 dually sensitive in situ hydrogels for the prevention of Alzheimer's disease induced by lipopolysaccharides, which is LPS. The objective of this paper was to test novel thermo and ion sensitive in situ hydrogels of thymosaponin B2 delivered in the nasal environment. Since this anti-AD agent has low oral bioavailability. LPS-injected mice were used as an AD model and showed significant improvement in spatial memory and a reduction in inducible nitric oxide synthase in the brain after treatment with thymosaponin B2 using this delivery method. So this next paper is by first author Ann, last author Pei. It was published in Frontiers of Immunology, and the title of the paper is PL201, a reported rhamnoside against Alzheimer's disease pathology, alleviates neuroinflammation and stimulates NRF2 signaling. The authors extend on previous findings that rhamnoside PL201 promotes neurogenesis, by showing that it also significantly reduces the accumulation of activated microglia and pro-inflammatory cytokines in APP-PS1-AD mice. In vitro, they also find that it increased expression and nuclear translocation of NRF2, this was in a microglial culture, and stimulated the NRF2 cascade, which included the upregulation of HO1 and downregulation of NFKB pathway. The next paper is also on NRF2. So the title of this paper is NRF2 Suppresses Oxidative Stress and Inflammation in APP Knock-in Alzheimer's Disease Model Mice. This is by first author Runo, last author Yamamoto, and it was published in Molecular Cell Biology. Investigating the involvement of NRF2 in AD, this group used an APP NLGF knock-in mouse model of AD in combination with a genetic NRF2 induction model, which is called KEEP1FA-FA. They found that when these models were crossed, memory impairment and reduced glutathione levels were rescued compared to the AD model alone. The authors also saw improved memory when NRF2 was induced pharmacologically in the AD model. Further, they identified the plasmalogen phosphatidylethanolamine, plasmalogen phosphatidylethanolamine level as a potential AD biomarker, as levels were decreased in the AD model alone, but were rescued with the cross. Overall, this suggests that the induction of NRF2 may be an important therapeutic target in AD. Okay, so switching gears again, this next paper is Bilberry anthocyanins improve neuroinflammation and cognitive dysfunction in APP-PS1 mice via the CD33 TREM2 tyroBP, perhaps, signaling pathway in microglia. This was published in Food and Function by first author Li, last author Wu. So the authors treated APP-PSenilin-1 mice, which I've also referred to as PS1 mice, with bilberry anthocyanins, to see whether these could act as a therapeutic for AD. They found that the compounds reversed cognitive defects as well as peripheral organ damage in the AD model mouse, but did not change oxidative stress or lipid metabolism-related indicators. The compounds additionally activated both microglia and astrocytes, downregulated the expression of inflammatory factors, and upregulated TREM2 and toll-like receptors. Relatedly, they also upregulated phagocytic function-related proteins, indicating that the compounds induced microglial phagocytosis of amyloid beta by modulating the CD33 TREM2 tyroBP signaling pathway. And the last paper that I'll read to you today is Protective Effects of Curcumin Against Neuroinflammation Induced by Amyloid Beta 2535 in Primary Rat Microglia. Modulation of High Mobility Group Box 1, Toll-like Receptor 4, and Receptor for Advanced Glycation End Products Expression. All right, that's a long title. First author is He, last author is Li, and this was published in the Annals of Translational Medicine. This group tested whether curcumin could effectively inhibit inflammation through the suppression of high mobility group box 1 protein, which is also referred to as HMGB1, production or related inflammatory responses in amyloid beta activated microglia. They did this in primary cells from 1 to 3 day old Sprague-Dawley rats that were treated with 50 micromolar of amyloid beta 2335 for 24 hours. 10 micromolar of curcumin was administered before amyloid beta treatment and was found to significantly inhibit HMGB1 expression and release in amyloid beta stimulated microglia. It also reduced TLR4 and RAGE expression, interleukin-1b, and TNF-alpha levels and protected neurons from indirect toxicity mediated by amyloid beta treated microglia. That's it for me today. I'm handing it off next to Ellen to cover the second half of preclinical testing. See you next time.
All right, so picking up where Nyla left off, let's continue with our preclinical testing papers. I'll start with a few papers that describe potential treatments targeting oxidative stress and mitochondrial dysfunction. First up, a paper titled Increased MIR34C Mediates Synaptic Deficits by Targeting Synaptotagmin 1 through the ROS-JNK-P53 pathway in Alzheimer's disease. This one was published in Aging Cell. First author is Shi, and last author is Xu. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's spelled XU. This paper worked off the multifactorial inverse relationship between cancer and Alzheimer's disease, which I'll be referring to as AD from now on in all the summaries, by the way, to investigate the use of the tumor suppressor MIR34C in the context of AD. They found a variety of interesting results. They found that expression of MIR34C was increased in oxidatively stressed HT22 cells, in the hippocampus of SAMP8 mice, and in the serum of patients with amnestic mild cognitive impairment. These increased levels were found to be mediated by the ROS-JNK-P53 pathway, and this negatively regulated synaptotagmin 1, targeting its 3' untranslated region. The researchers then found that administration of the MIR34 integumer AM34C into the CNS of SAMP8 mice rescued synaptotagmin 1 expression and resulted in improved performance in the Morris water maze. Overall, the authors suggested that MIR34C has biomarker potential and the pathway involving synaptotagmin could be a novel therapeutic target in AD. Our next paper is titled Epsilon-reversed peripheral oxidative stress induced by a mouse model of sporadic Alzheimer's disease. This is published in Molecular Biology Reports. First author is Klan, and last author is Noguera, and I apologize again for any pronunciation errors. So, as you may know, the intracerebroventricular streptozotocin injection model, which I'll be referring to as STZ, is a sporadic model of AD in rodents. The authors wanted to determine whether the injection in this model elicited peripheral oxidative damage that has been indicated in AD. They also explored whether the antioxidant, Epsilon, would be an effective treatment in this model. Male adult Swiss mice received intracerebroventricular STZ on days 1 and 3, then received Epsilon, or donepezil, through IP injection, for 14 days. They found that peripheral oxidative stress was present in both the kidney and liver of the STZ mice as reflected by lipid peroxidation, and that Epsilon and the AD drug, donepezil, were both effective at blocking this accumulated stress. So the next paper is titled Extract of Dengue Shayu San Ameliorates Cognition Deficits by Regulating DHA Metabolism in APP-PS1 mice. First author is Wang, and last author Li, and the journal is Journal of Ethnopharmacology. The authors describe many effects of the herbal formula Dengui Sheyu San, and again, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, but I'll be referring to this as DSS. So they're exploring the effects of this herbal formula on fatty acid metabolism and cognitive deficits in APP-PS1-AD mice. Treatment with DSS significantly ameliorated cognitive deficits in APP-PS1 mice. APP-PS1 mice showed increases in fatty acids TG, TC, and LDL-C, and decreases in HDL-C compared with wild type, and DSS significantly retarded these changes. Low content of the fatty acid DHA and low expression of some enzymes were reported from the hippocampus and cortex of APP-PS1 mice. However, DSS extract was able to significantly restore these changes. Also, APP-PS1 mice displayed lower levels of malondialdehyde and glutathione, and these changes were alleviated with DSS. DSS extract also decreased the levels of the following: PEG2, TXB2, and LTB4, and the expression levels of CPLA2, COX1, and COX2 in the hippocampus and in the cortex. Overall, the author suggests that DSS holds therapeutic potential against oxidative stress, inflammation, and cognitive deficits in AD. Next up, a paper called Inhibitory Effects of Curcumin on H2O2-Induced Cell Damage and APP Expression and Processing in SHSY5Y cells transfected with APP gene with the Swedish mutation. This is published in Molecular Biology Reports, first author Song, last author Wang. This group used an SHSY5Y cell line that stably expresses the APP gene with the Swedish mutation and investigated the inhibitory effects of curcumin on H2O2-induced cell damage and APP processing. They report that curcumin inhibits H2O2-induced decrease of cell growth and cell damage. It also alleviates H2O2-induced damage on mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation and membrane potential. In addition, curcumin inhibited H2O2-induced increase of APP cleavage. This seems to occur through a beta cleavage pathway, leading to a decrease in intracellular A-beta production. These results imply that curcumin can be used to treat AD through inhibiting oxidative damage-induced APP beta cleavage and intracellular A-beta generation. All right, so moving on to a paper called Neuronal Mitochondria-Targeted Mice Cells Relieving Oxidative Stress for Delayed Progression of Alzheimer's Disease. This is published in Biomaterials. First author is Yang, and last author is Zhang. This group prepared neuronal mitochondria-targeted mice cells and used them to significantly increase the encapsulated resveratrol's concentration in the neuronal mitochondria. This approach resulted in an alleviation of oxidative stress and in the stabilization of the dynamic balance of mitochondrial fission and fusion. The targeted mice cells restored the cognitive performance in APP-PS1 transgenic mice, reduced amyloid deposition and tau hyperphosphorylation. It also protected synapses and inhibited microglia proliferation. These results demonstrate the delay of the progression of AD through reversing neuronal mitochondrial dysfunction by the targeted delivery of antioxidants. So next, we have a paper titled Purified Oleocanthal and Ligstroside Protect Against Mitochondrial Dysfunction in Models of Early Alzheimer's Disease and Brain Aging. The first author is Gruel, last author Eckert, and the journal is Experimental Neurology. In this paper, researchers explored the effects of olive polyphenols commonly found in the Mediterranean diet in the cellular AD model SHSY5Y-APP, and the NMRI mouse model of aging. They tested many phenolic compounds and found that the compounds oleocanthal and ligstroside enhance the capacity of mitochondria respiratory chain complexes. They found that ligstroside increased mRNA expression of SIRT1, that's SIRT1, CREB1, COMPLEX1, and GPX1. And that oleocanthal, but not ligstroside, decreased A-beta 140 levels in the cell model. In NMRI mice who received 6 months of diet supplemented with ligstroside, started at 12 months of age, they observed improved spatial working memory, brain ATP levels, and an extended life. Despite ligstroside not having an effect on A-beta production, the authors propose that this compound seems to be beneficial in multiple ways for AD and aging. So that's it for that subsection. And next we have one paper that is on targeting metabolism. This paper is called A Dietary Ketone Ester Normalizes Abnormal Behavior in a Mouse Model of Alzheimer's Disease. It's published in International Journal of Molecular Sciences. First author is Pawlowski, last author Veach. In this study, a ketone ester, and this is a big word here, a ketone ester of D-beta-hydroxybutyrate was incorporated into a diet and fed to triple transgenic AD mice. So I'll refer to this diet as KET. In the hippocampi of the KET-fed mice, there were higher concentrations of citrate and alpha-ketoglutarate, as well as higher concentrations of glutamate, aspartate, and N-acetylaspartate compared with controls. Hippocampal N-acetylaspartate predicted the outcome of several exploratory and avoidance-related behaviors. Ketosis restored citrate and alpha-ketoglutarate in the hippocampi of aging mice. Higher concentrations of N-acetylaspartate corresponded with greater exploratory activity and reduced avoidance-related behavior. Check out the paper for more details. Now we have a paper exploring the role of gut microbiota in AD. It is called Bidirectional Interactions Between Curcumin and Gut Microbiota in Transgenic Mice with Alzheimer's Disease. Seem to be a lot of papers on curcumin in this month. This is published in Applied Microbiology and Technology. First author is Sun, and last author, G. Delving into the pharmacology of curcumin in the context of AD treatment, this group found that it both influences and is influenced by the gut microbiota. In APP-PS1 double transgenic mice, they found that curcumin altered the relative abundances of, get ready for this, Bacteroidaceae, Prevotolaceae, Lactobacillaceae, and Ricinaliaceae. And I'm probably not pronouncing those right, but it altered the relative abundances of those at the family level, and Prevotella, Bacteroids, and Parabacteroids at the genus level. A total of 8 curcumin metabolites generated from the gut microbiota were also detected, many of which may be neuroprotective. Okay, so we're going to move on to a set of papers that described multi-targeted treatment approaches and neuroprotective compounds. We have 10 papers that we sorted into this section, starting with a paper titled The Development of Advanced Structural Framework as Multi-Target Directed Ligands for the Treatment of Alzheimer's Disease. This was published in the European Journal of Medicinal Chemistry. First author is Sang, and last author is Tan. This group synthesized a series of novel drug derivatives based on existing compounds, including donepezil, apigenin, naringenin, and genistein. They found that one of these compounds, called TM4, was an effective multi-target candidate for AD treatment. It inhibited acetylcholinesterase, butylcholinesterase, showed potent antioxidant activity, inhibited copper ion-induced A-beta aggregation, activated UPS degradation pathways, induced autophagy for the clearance of AD-related proteins, and could cross the blood-brain barrier in vitro. Wow, that's a lot of things. They also found that the compound was effective in the zebrafish AD model and analyzed the metabolism of the drug in rats. Overall, the drug seems like a promising candidate. Next up, a paper titled Drug Synergy as a Strategy for Compression of Morbidity in a C. elegans model of Alzheimer's disease. First author is T.O., last author Gruber, and this is published in the journal Geroscience. These researchers were interested in whether combining different drugs could result in synergistic benefits in a C. elegans model of AD. They combined metformin and lithium, the former of which targets mitochondria and energy metabolism, while the latter targets proteostasis. They looked for benefits in lifespan and health span using a transgenic nematode strain, GRU102, which expresses pan-neuronal human amyloid beta. Alone, metformin and lithium increase the lifespan of both the control and the AD model worms. Combining metformin and lithium did not lead to any synergistic increase in GRU102 lifespan. However, this drug did significantly lower morbidity when compared with each individual drug. Despite overexpressing pathogenic human A-beta in their neurons, GRU102 worms treated with a combination treatment had longer lifespans and significantly reduced morbidity, even compared with untreated non-transgenic animals. These findings point to combination treatment as a strategy to address morbidity. They also shed light on the distinction between health span and lifespan. So the next few summaries are on the shorter side. First one is a paper titled Acetyl-11 Keto-Beta-Boswellic Acid Ameliorates Cognitive Deficits and Reduces Amyloid Beta Levels in APP-PS1 Mice Through Antioxidant and Anti-Inflammatory Pathways. This is published in Free Radical Biology and Medicine. First author is Wei, W-E-I, and last author is Shang. This group investigated the potential therapeutic effects of the triterpenoid compound acetyl-11 keto-boswellic acid, or AKBA, on the APPPS1 model of AD. They found that the compound not only rescued cognitive deficits and lightened amyloid burden, but also that it inhibited BACE1, or BAC1, protein expression and modulated both antioxidant and anti-inflammatory pathways through NRF2, HO1, and the IKB-alpha-P65 pathways. Thus, there seems to be potential for this compound as a therapeutic intervention for AD. Our next paper is Mid-Infrared Light Treatment Attenuates Cognitive Decline and Alters the Gut Microbiota Community in APP-PS1 Mouse Model. This is published in Biochemical and Biophysical Research Communications. First author is Wang, last author Ren. With the increasing interest in applying near-infrared or far-infrared light as an AD therapeutic, this group investigated the effects of mid-infrared light, which has a peak wavelength of 7.7 to 10 microns, on APP-PS1 mice. They found that this treatment improved learning and memory, reduced plaque load, and restored the gut microbiota composition of the APPPS1 mice to that of wild-type controls. As always, you can check out the paper for more info. Now we have a paper titled EGB761 Ameliorates Cell Necroptosis by Attenuating RIP1-Mediated Mitochondrial Dysfunction and ROS production in both in vivo and in vitro models of Alzheimer's disease. Our first author is Tu, and last author is Liu, and this is published in the journal Brain Research. In this study, researchers investigated the impact of ginkgo biloba extract 761, or EGB761, in Alzheimer's disease models in vitro and in vivo. Their in vitro model was cultured BV2 microglial cells treated with A-beta 1-42, and the in vivo rat model was established by injection of A-beta 1-42. They found that EGB761 treatment alleviated cell death, oxidative stress, and calcium overload in the in vitro model and cognitive deficits in the rat model. Activation of the JNK pathway was reduced by this treatment in both the cultured cells and in the rat hippocampus. Overall, the authors conclude that EGB761 has some beneficial effects in AD models, perhaps modulated through the JNK pathway. Moving on to a paper with a lot of big words that I'll probably have some trouble with. So it's called EPA-enriched ethanolamine. Plasmalogen, and EPA-enriched phosphatidylethanolamine enhance BDNF TrkB Krebs signaling and inhibit neuronal apoptosis in vitro and in vivo. So thanks for bearing with me on that one. This is published in Food and Function, and the first author is Qi, C-H-E, last author Wang. This group used a combination of in vitro and in vivo approaches to further elucidate the mechanism behind EPA-enriched ethanolamine plasmalogen, and EPA-enriched, it's again that word, phosphatidylethanolamine mediated improvements in learning and memory deficits. I won't tell you how many times I re-recorded that. And EPA refers to the omega-3 fatty acid eicosapentaenoic acid. They used primary cultured hippocampal neurons in vitro and found that both EPA-enriched species were able to upregulate anti-apoptotic proteins and downregulate pro-apoptotic proteins. In their cognitively impaired rat model, they found that EPA-enriched ethanolamine plasmalogen exerted more significant effects in enhancing neuroprotective BDNF TrkB Krebb signaling. This work suggests that the EPA-enriched ethanolamine plasmalogen may be a potential AD therapeutic. Next paper is quercetin is protective against short-term dietary advanced glycation end products intake induced cognitive dysfunction in aged ICR mice. First author is Yang, last author is Wan, and the journal is the Journal of Food Biochemistry. In this paper, the authors studied the role of dietary advanced glycation end products, which I'll refer to as DAGEs, D-A-G-E, in the pathogenesis of AD, and whether the antioxidant quercetin could have beneficial effects on cognitive dysfunction. The authors tested whether taking DAGEs for 21 days would lead to cognitive dysfunction in aged ICR mice and explored the protective effects of quercetin in this context. They randomly sorted 14-month-old ICR mice into four groups. Control, the AGEs I'll call them, which is the diet supplemented with the advanced glycation end products, quercetin group, and the AGE diet supplemented with quercetin. In their study, quercetin eased the cognitive impairment that was caused by DAGEs in aged mice. They suspect this was mediated by a reduction in cathepsin B, tau phosphorylation, and neuroinflammation. Quercetin also increased the alpha diversity index and lowered phylum Verrucomicrobia of gut microbiota. The authors suggest that quercetin supplementation might be beneficial for improving cognitive function in elderly subjects that have a high consumption of DAGEs in their diet, such as that caused by grilling, frying, and broiling of food. Next up, a paper titled Oral Treatment with Royal Jelly Improves Memory and Presents Neuroprotective Effects on ICV-STZ Rat Model of Sporadic Alzheimer's Disease. First author is D'Souza E. Silva, and last author is Lopes Sandoval. The objective of this study was to investigate the effects of oral treatment with royal jelly, which is a substance produced by worker honeybees. So the intracerebroventricular injection of streptozotocin model of AD, which is a Wistar rat model of sporadic AD, were treated for 2 weeks with royal jelly. Long-term oral administration of royal jelly resulted in increased retention time for working spatial memory, reduced neurodegeneration and oxidative stress level, and increased proliferation of new neurons in the hippocampus. Next up, a paper called Neuroprotective Effects of Ethyl Pyruvate Against Aluminum Chloride-Induced Alzheimer's Disease in Rats via Inhibiting Toll-like Receptor 4. First author of this one is Chavali, and last author is Saxena, published in Journal of Molecular Neuroscience. In this paper, the authors explored the neuroprotective role of ethyl pyruvate in AD. To test this, they used primary neuron glial mixed cell cultures and an in vivo model of aluminum chloride-induced AD in rats. They performed histopathology of the brain, estimated oxidant and antioxidant parameters, and memory impairment using a POLE test, the PLUS maze, and the Morris-Water maze test. They found that ethyl pyruvate alleviated the aluminum chloride-induced neurotoxicity in neuron glial mixed cell culture. They also reported a rescue of some of the consequences of the chronic administration of aluminum chloride in the rat model, as assessed by histopathological, neurochemical, and behavioral tests. Therefore, ethyl pyruvate seems to be effective against in vitro and in vivo models of aluminum chloride-induced AD. The next paper is titled Memory-Enhancing Effects of Ishige Foliocea Extract, In Vitro and In Vivo Study. This is in the Journal of Food Biochemistry. First author is Kim, and last author is This group investigated the protective effect of an ethanol extract of Ishige Foliaceae. This is a functional food in East Asian countries, and I'll refer to this extract as EEI. They found that EEI protected human neuronal cell death from H2O2 and beta amyloid-induced cell damage. They also used the model of scopolamine-induced memory deficits and reported that EEI induced BDNF track B ERK signaling, affecting synaptic plasticity in the hippocampus, and it also improved memory deficits in this model. Okay, so our last section on preclinical testing covers papers that focused on potential treatments to improve cognition and memory. There are 5 papers in this subsection, and we'll start with effects of ecgonine methyl ester on cognition in scopolamine-impaired and aged rats. The authors are Curry and Marler, and this is published in Psychopharmacology. This in vivo study tested for cognitive enhancement by ecgonine methyl ester, or EME, in rats. Impaired cognition was pharmacologically induced by scopolamine in young rats and spontaneously present in aged rats. A single dose of EME reversed scopolamine impairment, indicating involvement of acetylcholine receptors. Longer-term treatment improved cognition in aged rats. EME also reversed thigmotaxis seen in aged rats, and this behavior is believed to indicate anxiety. The authors suggest that EME might induce cognitive enhancement and relief of anxiety in cocaine-impaired humans and in other cognitive disorders. Next up, a paper titled "An Antisense Oligonucleotide Leads to Suppressed Transcription of HDAC2 and Long-Term Memory Enhancement." This is published in Molecular Therapy Nucleic Acids, and the first author is Poplowski, last author Greer. Investigating the memory suppressor gene histone deacetylase 2, HDAC2, as a pharmacological target for AD, this group used an antisense oligonucleotide to reduce HDAC2 mRNA in mice. They injected a single dose of the antisense oligonucleotide into the CNS of the mice and found that it reduced protein and mRNA levels of HDAC2 for 16 weeks and enhanced location memory for 8 weeks. The HDAC2 reduction was found to cause alterations in ERK signaling and memory-associated immune signaling pathways, and the antisense oligonucleotide also targeted non-polyadenylated HDAC2 regulatory RNA. This reduced HDAC2 transcription by stalling RNA polymerase 2. The next paper is called "Protective Effects of Cytocholine and Benfotiamine Each Alone and in Combination on Streptozotocin-Induced Memory Impairment in Mice." This was published in Clinical Psychopharmacology Neuroscience, and the first author is Safavi, last author Rabbani. This group induced diabetes in mice with an IP injection of streptozotocin and investigated the effects of the dietary supplements cytocholine and benfotiamine and their co-administration on memory impairment in the mice. Object recognition task results demonstrated that all doses of each drug and their combination were effective at reversing the memory loss induced by streptozotocin. Their results from the passive avoidance test showed that only benfotiamine at 100 mg per kilogram administered with cytocholine improved memory significantly. Now we have a paper titled "High Mobility Group Box 1 Ameliorates Cognitive Impairment in the 3XTGAD Mouse Model." This was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, and the first author is Zhang, last author is Dai, or Dai, D-A-I. Searching for novel functions of the chromatin protein high mobility group box 1, this group studied it in the context of AD using the 3XTGAD mouse model. They intracerebroventricularly injected female mice with 4.5 micrograms of the protein or saline, and they found that cognitive impairment was improved along with increases in the following: synapsin 1, synaptophysin, MAP2, NEUN, phosphorylated Krebs, and GFAP in the high mobility group box 1 treated mice. They also observed a decrease in intracellular A-beta and increased neurogenesis in the dentate gyrus, but no effect on tau phosphorylation. Overall, this work reveals novel functions of high mobility group box 1 in enhancing neuroplasticity and improving cognitive function. Our last paper is titled Dracocephalum moldavica attenuates scopolamine-induced cognitive impairment through activation of hippocampal ERK Krebs signaling in mice. This is published in the Journal of Ethnopharmacology. First author is Deepa, last author is Park. In this study, this group investigated the effects of the ethanolic extract of the plant Dracocephalum moldavica leaves, which I will refer to as EEDM, on cognitive impairment in mice. They tested this on a scopolamine-induced mouse model of cognitive impairment, and they were also interested in the underlying mechanisms of action of this extract. EEDM significantly ameliorated the scopolamine-induced step-through latency reduction in mice when tested with the passive avoidance task. It also alleviated memory impairment in the Morris water maze. Additionally, EEDM increased the phosphorylation levels of ERK and CREB, or CREB, in the hippocampus, but did not change the activity of acetylcholinesterase. All right, so that's everything for the papers we covered from February 2020 on preclinical testing for Alzheimer's disease. We hope you enjoyed listening to this trial episode and that it was helpful for your research, and thanks for bearing with us through all of those difficult words today. And now Sarah will say a few words to wrap up the episode. Goodbye.
That's it for today. This podcast was brought to you by a team of scientists. Thank you, Ellen Kosh, Ellen Rowe, Nyla Coleman, Asad Lone, and Sonia So for your hard work in making this possible. Oh, and my name is Sara Luigi. The music is from Journey of a Neurotransmitter by musician and fellow neuroscientist Anusha Kamesh. You can find the original piece and her other music on SoundCloud under Anusha Kamesh or on her YouTube channel, AK Music. And last but not least, thank you for tuning in with us. We hope this podcast is helpful to you and that you'll continue to follow our episodes. Don't forget to subscribe to our mailing list if you want to get access to the bibliography for each of our episodes. The references come with timestamps, which hopefully will make it easier for you to find the papers that caught your interest. You can find a link to the sign-up form in the episode description. And right next to it, you'll also find a link to the feedback survey. Yes, your feedback matters to us. So please, let us know how we're doing and how we can make this podcast a better tool for you. If you're interested in joining our team, give us a shout by email. You can help with content development, podcast editing, advertising, and you can be part of a new and exciting venture. Reach us by email at aminderpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter. And on this note, we hope you found our podcast useful and accessible. Until next time.